Hello and welcome to another episode of the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. I'm AD Packham and we're all becoming believers in association with AllFootballShirts.com. Well, what was meant to be a glorious European debut turned into somewhat of a Greek tragedy as AEK Athens gave us a reality check and they returned back to Greece with 3 points. I'm sure that lessons have been learned. And then, of course, on Sunday, we had the chance to get that winning feeling back as we returned to league action. What happened was that we saw probably our worst performance under Roberto De Zerbi, but a gift of an own goal and two goals from Karu Mitoma gave us a win that leaves us in third in the table. The games continue to come thick and fast with a trip to Stamford Bridge in the League Cup on Wednesday, followed by what could be a tricky trip to Villa Park on Saturday lunchtime. So joining me today as we look back over the week is, of course, Alan Wares. And we are delighted to welcome back Justin Brentnell. Just Justin, hello.
Hello there.
How are you, mate? All right?
Yeah, I'm okay. A bit tired. Lots of
yeah, I think we're all... Well, I sound this.
Can we not send our listeners to sleep straight away by... just pointing out the, you know, how fatigued we are, how, you know, can I just point out, AD, you might be able to hear a rasp in his voice. He feels like, Justin feels tired. I'm going to be the lively one today. So, yeah, the boots are definitely swapped around and, you know, me being the lively one could be messy.
I was actually auditioning for BBC Book at Bedtime, but, you know. I was going to read you a nice. I was going to read you a nice story about a teddy bear or something.
Listen, I know we can joke about it, but I do know that there's some people who've been listening to us down the years, and we are talking many. Let's face it, AD. This show is of an age where it now has zits who listen to this show and go to
this
sleep.
Show can legally drive.
Well, yeah, it's not an idea to drive while, you know, because you will hit the zeds. But yes, your voice has sent me to sleep so many times, and I'm thinking I probably do that to absolutely everyone. So, night, night, children. Shall we talk about football instead?
Yes, Justin, let's do that, and let's start with Thursday night then. And this was destined to happen, right? It's the Brighton way.
Yeah, a huge, huge build up, and somewhat of an anticlimax. Although, I think I'm as guilty as anyone in terms of how I viewed the match. I was looking at it through the prism of it being something that was very historical. I was getting very, very excited about the Europa theme music. I got very excited at stadium seeing the stewards had special Europa stewards on, bibs on. So lots of little details like that was occupying my mind rather than how good were AEK Athens. And so I have to say, I was shocked and potentially justified so, because
Well, I think
saying before the game, Al, play the game, not the occasion. And I think too many players got caught up in the occasion.
Well, let's put it this way: the vast majority of fans certainly did. We did the amount of media whoring we did. We certainly got caught up in it. I know that I was excited by the occasion. Absolutely. You'd like to think the players are professional enough that they would treat it just like another game. And certainly there's enough experience in that side, even though it might have only been half the team that's already played in Europe. There's enough experience in that side to, as you say, play the game and not the occasion. So we can work on I think fans sometimes work on an assumption that how we're feeling transmits itself to the pitch. I mean, I'd be interested to know from any players. I mean, I think they'd flatly deny in the here and now that they played the occasion. They might admit it later. Who knows?
Yeah.
But I think it's just because we felt it didn't mean to say the players weren't going to be professional enough.
But Justin, there was a couple of players that went missing at Wembley that went missing on Thursday night as well. So, I mean, maybe it is a nerves thing with some of them.
Potentially, I was more looking back. I'm more concerned with pointing the finger at the players who weren't there, and it wasn't their fault at all. But without Lewis Dunk at the back, I think we did look kind of quite naive. He's the man who organises our defence against set pieces. He's the man who dictates play going forward. And we had Igor as a debutant, and Van Hecke, who is still, had a great game against Man United, but I think he's better when he's playing next to Lewis Dunk, which you could say about lots of.
Everybody's better when they're playing alongside Lewis Dunk. That's the whole thing. Have you not noticed this, Chelsea?
So
Well, I mean,
yeah, that
go on, Justin. Yeah,
I think that was it wasn't a very good start to the match, and not having him there, and we desperately needed someone on the pitch with that experience to sort of have a word with the players. I felt that we were trying too hard. Players like João Pedro were trying to pull off impossible flicks and Hollywood passes, and we were just giving possession back, which isn't the Roberto De Zerbi way.
The flicks thing, I know, irritated you, Al.
Yes, but I mean, that's probably about number 73 in a list of things that I could have found irritating. No, listen, AIK were well organised. There's no problem with that. And I do understand the point. Insofar as when he was on the ball, I thought Igor was a perfectly decent substitute for Lewis Dunk. I take your point. Yes, you do need the leader. And if we're going to be emotional about it, then of all players who deserve to be out there on that amazing, sort of red letter day of a match for us, it's Lewis Dunk, who's been at the club since birth and has seen the rise of the renaissance of this football club. And the fact that he wasn't there, I think, sort of, as you say, the phrase is Greek tragedy, but for him not to be playing. I mean, I take your point also, Justin, about how he can organise the defence, but I've also seen him play in a defence where sometimes the set pieces have really turned to custard for us, and we've at times he's been the one who's been at fault for it. So I think that the loss of Lewis Dunk, I think, is probably more to do with, I think, the making us fans feel a lot better rather than the players in question. Because I mean, if we're going to sort of start on players, I thought that Igor was a perfectly good player for us. It's nice to know that there is some strength and depth there, and he actually played a much better game than I was expecting him to.
I very much enjoyed his performance. And I mean, Justin, the situation is, yes, Dunk's presence would have been massive, a fillip for everybody. In fact, obviously, everyone was still singing his name. But I don't think there was an awful lot that Dunk could have done about the first goal. Perhaps the second and third, then you could argue that Lewis would be there or thereabouts and might have managed to get a block in. But the first one, I mean, the guy headed it further than I can kick it. I mean, the marking was shocking. That's true.
Well,
but I'm prepared to give credit to them for a brilliant set piece.
Yeah, that's where I've got to disagree with you, AD, because I think that player had a circle of like 10 meters radius around him and no players in. And I think that's the sort of thing that I'm pretty sure Dunk just would not allow as the ball's coming in. I just, it was incredibly naive of us. The Athens player finished it perfectly, but I do get the sentiment that it was more than just Dunk missing. As Al said, there's probably 73 reasons why we didn't make that result, and we played, one of our worst games in a long time. But I think it's kind of we've dived in the pool now, haven't we? Hopefully we get acclimatized to the temperature of this thing, and in our next match or our next couple of matches, we're facing from what the media is portraying, two absolute basket case clubs in Holland and France. So fingers crossed we can find our feet.
I just want to come across Justin's point here. I'm going to agree with his disagree with his disagreement. One of the reasons why that fellow was left unmarked was because in this particular instance, and it's rare that we do so, we decided to adopt the tactic of zonal marking, which is basically protecting the goal rather than going man to man. Now, if Motomo had stuck to his man, and let's face it, they had two or three players on the edge of the area. Yes, you could have had one or two of those other players go out there and mark them. But when you've got someone on the edge of the area, you don't necessarily seek to assume that the corner's going to go straight to him. I mean, you have seen Southampton pull this stunt against us. What's his name? Vestergaard always seemed to score towering headers against us. So it's not as though it's new, but, you know, this is what happens when you go for zonal versus man-to-man. And I couldn't help feeling with man-to-man, we'd have actually been beasted anyway. Okay. So it's, I don't think it's necessarily down to, specifically down to the personnel. It's not necessarily specifically down to the tactic, because, you know, zonal marking, I think, is kind of an unusual thing for us.
Yeah.
However, you know, it was, as you say, a very good header. And we would be screaming from the rooftops if it would have been us that scored it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's go back way beyond the beginning of the game, actually, and let's talk about our good friend, the referee in this our Estonian buddy, who, in his wisdom, decided that he wasn't going to change his shirt, but none of our goalkeeper shirts, all of which it clashed with him, although he had a bag full of three different coloured shirts for him and his assistants. Poor old Jason Steele had to rummage around the cupboards and come up with the old Hyperturk kit from last season and print it up as a goalkeeper shirt.
Well, I'm curious to know what the clash was, because you've got, I suppose, what have we seen Steele wear? We've seen him wear all orange. I suppose he's got all yellow. What's the
orange and black are the goalkeeper shirts this year. I think there's a pink one as well.
Right. So, and well, I mean, Hyperturk, it seemed to be perfectly all right. And to be honest, I didn't actually really notice that it was the Hyperturk kit from the past two or three seasons. But we're back to the issue of the colour blindness, and it's something we've raised on the show before. And especially our friends Kieran Maguire and obviously our show sponsor Phil Shelley have raised this on many occasions about the notion of colour blindness. And it's not, if you're not colourblind, it's actually quite a tricky thing to actually know what it is. So in this instance, like you say, okay, Jason Steele ended up with a Hyperturk kit. Okay, that's fine. It works. And then the referee, in his lack of wisdom, chooses a kit which to colourblind people then clashes with IX kit. I didn't understand it myself. As a non-colorblind person, I could easily tell the difference. But like I say, the 2,000 people in the stadium, by law of averages, who are colorblind, I think they might have struggled a bit. And I think someone even pointed out after the game, there was a couple of times when one or two Brighton players may have let the cat out of the bag by passing the ball directly to the referee, because, or trying to get past the referee because they couldn't necessarily tell the difference.
Maybe Justin.
Yeah, it's there's an irony there, isn't there? That he's so pedantic about the keeper's kit, but clashes with Ajax. But yeah, I think there's a lot more to discuss about that referee.
Because
that was just the beginning of the fun he had on Thursday night.
Yeah, well, okay. Well, let's move on to that. And I mean, I've got it down as Varsical Refereeing Volume 1 here.
Well, can we start 30 seconds into the game, mate, when Estupiñán got absolutely flattened? I mean, there is a rule about shoulder-to-shoulder. That's fine. But shoulder-to-spine, I don't think is in the rules. And he got absolutely taken out from behind. Referee just went, all right, play on. Weirdly enough, I think it's the same thing happened 2 minutes later. Us on them, and again he said play on, and I'm thinking clearly somewhere down the line, I mean, there's the laws of the game are going to be universal across Europe, at least they should be. It's sometimes down to interpretation now, and this is something we're going to have to get used to. In certain European countries, a foot that's higher than the knee is a yellow card offence. It's a high foot, whereas here it's just a case, you know, if you can get it around someone's Adam's apple, you're okay. And so you get to realise the referee's interpretations due to the culture of their game. Having said that, a penalty is still a penalty.
Yeah, well, I mean, with sometimes these days, it's very hard to distinguish what actually is a penalty. But when it's full-on assault, pretty much... and then you book it. And then Pedro got booked for his non-dive. It was just, I mean, I can't see on what planet that wasn't the penalty in real time. He had a really good view of it.
Well, irrespective of whether you had a good view of it or not, there's a couple of things at play here. One, Pedro goes down. Okay. Genuinely, I actually thought that the way he went down, he actually slipped. I mean, admittedly, I'm in the West Stand upper. I'm 70 yards from the action. But I actually genuinely thought he slipped. Okay, fine. But in terms of a player going down, and let's face it, there's barely a player on the planet that doesn't actually sometimes go down a bit easier in the penalty area than they do anywhere else. So the referee then has to determine whether it's a foul or not. And a player going over is either a foul or it's a dive is actually a ludicrous summation. There are so many other things. He could have slipped. There could be a coming together that wasn't a foul. There could be a stumble. There could be any number of things. However, even then, with the referee signalling, he did that kind of arms across himself to say no penalty. And then blew for a free kick and yellow card. And the action should be, if he's convinced himself enough that it's a dive, you immediately blow the whistle for a free kick because, in his mind, João Pedro has committed a foul of simulation. But he didn't do that. He then decided, that's a free kick, that's a dive. So the fact of whether he had a good view of it or not is by the by. If he didn't have a good view of it, he's not in a position to book Pedro.
No, Justin?
Yeah, I agree. Normally, the blatant dives are, nowadays, they're given away a bit by the opposition defenders or other players who tend to get very, very upset. There's a lot of shouting and gesticulating. And sometimes they go over to the player on the deck and try and pick them up. There didn't seem to be any of that. So I was kind of quite confused because I thought it was a penalty at first glance. So, yeah. And then as soon as the VAR thing comes on the screen, then I was 100% that was going to be a penalty.
Sure. And the point
and it was,
that...
and up stepped Pedro to score on our first goal in European competition.
At least the referee had the good grace to look embarrassed, as he should. And I'm glad he did actually rescind the yellow card, because the rest of his performance made me think, well, if he carried this on, I bet he doesn't actually rescind the yellow card. Thankfully, he did. So,
well, there's a few other instances where we could... Yeah. Get involved in that. But I mean, actually, before the penalty, we did actually have a couple of other chances to level the score. There was one for Fati, and there was another, probably better chance for Igor, who was basically pretty much had the goal at his mercy and somehow put it wide. But 1-1, it
sorry,
was.
Sorry, AD, you cannot make a Brighton debut and not miss a sitter.
Plenty of people that. Haven't even been near to missing a sitter on a Brighton debut.
Well, let's face it. I mean, I think that Igor's going to have a good career with us on account of the fact he missed a sitter in his first game. It's written in the stars.
Okay, well, Athens did actually restore their lead, Justin. And this one, it was another set piece that had our defence at sixes and sevens.
Yeah, it looked like kind of, I don't want to say schoolboy stuff, but... that is defending that sort of thing where the ball is coming over and you all have to turn around. I don't understand why that happened. I don't understand how our line was wrong. There's a gap in between the defensive line and the keeper. And either the defence or the keeper has to come and claim that ball. You don't just all turn around and watch the opposition get it. You see all those goals all the time in the Premier League they were, I suppose, easy to score. You can only score those when the you put a ball in like that and the defence gets it completely wrong, and that's what happened. It was appalling.
Again, I'm going to marginally disagree, because if that defence, as you're suggesting, was say 5 yards further back, they're in risk then, and this is mindful of what happened with our first goal against Bournemouth. If that defence is right on top of the goalkeeper, that's when you have utter confusion. I'm going to more credit the quality of the pass, because it doesn't matter where the line was, whether it's 15 yards out, 10 yards out, 5 yards out. It was placed on an absolute plate that it cleared the Brighton defenders. And
I don't think it did. I mean, it did ricochet around a little bit.
Well, I mean,
I was watching this again earlier, and it was a ball into the corridor of uncertainty, which we're going to talk about later on anyway. But yeah. I mean, and you know, but the ball was there to be cleared, and it did hit a couple of our defenders, but they were all in close proximity to each other. And the Greek guy, I forget who it was, sorry, but he just managed to get his foot to the ball before anybody else. And steer it home. So
and again, I would say that if that was us that had done that, would you be criticised? You probably wouldn't. You wouldn't care. But would you criticise their defence, or would you say no? The quality of the ball was so good.
I would not care. You are correct. I would be doing a dance of 1,000 tarks and being very.
Yes, I know. I think probably more as much as Justin's. I think putting the blame fairly and squarely on the collective defence. I'm also going to credit the quality of the pass that came in. So, and if only we had people, well, we do have people that can do that. If only we have people that could do it more often. Right, and even sure. Then, when one of our players gets the ball, they'll still stick it wide. Looking at you, Lewis Dunk. Looking at you, Igor.
Well, I've got another thing. I've got Varsical Refereeing Volume 2. It's like now that's what they call music, isn't it, Justin? It's great. But okay, well, this one again, another clear cut one which went to the video assistant referee. It was clear cut.
I can understand why the referee may not have seen it on account of the fact that the actual incident,
was blind.
The kicking of him, was on the blind side. Because the bloke took a wild swing. I mean, that in itself, even if he'd missed the ball and the player, that in itself could have been a penalty for the intent of the lack of due care and attention in which he swung his foot. As it was, he swiped Pedro's shin. Luckily, it managed to stay in its sockets, because he really could have kicked that over the east stand. But because it was probably a glancing thing, and there was, let's put it this way, when his leg is being swung, there's nothing stopping it. I mean, it's a clear swing from beginning to end. So when it looks like that, it looks like it hasn't touched the forward. But it has. It's clearly caught him. But I can understand why the referee would have missed it. And maybe even the lines were missing it, because, again, it's on the blind side of that. But
have you finished making excuses for him now?
No, I would say that, because where was the referee and how could he see it? I mean, he swung his leg with no idea how much contact he'd have made.
It was on the pitch wearing the wrong coloured shirt, apparently. Justin?
I think, adding to Al's point, I guess, the ball kind of went the other side of Pedro and the kick went on the reverse. So if he was watching the ball, then he could have missed it, I guess. From where I was, it looked a more blatant penalty than the first. I was worried about an injury to Pedro. He just boosted it. But I get the angle of the referee thing.
Yeah, well, Pedro kept his nerve and he got his second of the night. And very shortly after that, he actually could have had a hat trick.
I'm just wondering, actually, let's rewind that for a second. Who was the last player to actually score two penalties for us in a game? I mean, because we've had two penalties in a game and it's either been a different penalty taker.
Well,
or
Alexis
it's
missed
someone's
one and scored one at Wolves.
Exactly. I mean, I'm thinking
Glenn's
back with Dean. It's been a while, isn't it?
It could be Glenn.
Don't forget,
we went through a long period of time where we didn't actually score any penalties.
Well,
so.
I do remember a game against Leeds at home where we won 2-0 and both were penalties, but I do recall that
scorers.
Smith.
It was CMS.
No, not that game. One was Murray scored one of the penalties, and I couldn't tell you who the other one was. It might have been someone like Purper or Stevens. I can't remember, but point is that it's been, actually, let's run this one by our listener. When was the last time one player scored two penalties for Brighton in a game?
Oh, there we go.
And I'm not including the shootouts too. Here as well. So,
well, yeah. Okay. But I mean, like I said, shortly after that, Pedro did have the opportunity to actually put us ahead in the game for the first time. And it was an absolute humdinger of a ball from Van Hecker to actually put the ball through to him. But he just didn't quite get his feet sorted out. And it ended up being a good save by the keeper, Justin.
It reminded me of a Mope shot, a classic. Yeah. The sort of shots we were doing under Graham Potter. So I don't think it was that good a save. I don't think the keeper had narrowed down the angle.
It was easy. He could have made it more difficult for the keeper, you think?
Yeah, he could have digged it into the other side. There was a big gap in one side, and so the keeper went with his direction, and for 30 million, okay, he's replaced McAllister's penalties, which is brilliant. He's scoring them, but I would have expected a bit more. But it's early days for João Pedro, but that might have got us the win, mightn't it? So it's annoying.
It's the kind of chance where I think that Ferguson would have finished it off nicely. That's not to say that Pedro's not capable of it, but also I think he may not have realised that he had a little bit more time than he did, because he was put through so gloriously. I actually thought he was offside. I've seen the replay since. I can see he wasn't. But yeah, I think he had a bit more time than he realised. But yeah, I thought he snatched it a bit. He could have actually taken his time. He could have even squared it. I don't know, but it wasn't. Yeah, I agree with Justin on that score. It was a little bit more payish.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Athens did add a third, and it was let's rewind a little bit there. Actually, I mean, do you think that maybe, what's the word I'm looking for? Not nerves, basically inexperience is the word that I'm looking for. Do you think that maybe we should have maybe like shut up shop a little bit and maybe actually like played out the draw?
No, one, it's not De Zerbi's way. Two, no. It's a home
game. I knew
that
was going to be the answer.
Yeah, two, it's a home game. I thought that, you know, you could see that. I think from minute one to minute 90, as you said, AD, they played the occasion a bit too much. And whilst we did well to sort of, you know, get them back to 2-2, I don't want to use the word naive, because for the game as a whole, irrespective of the result, for the game as a whole, we didn't look out of place on a European stage. We deserved to be there. On another occasion where, and we mentioned this earlier, where Pedro's flicks, and then I think someone else came on and decided to try to do that as well. When you're sort of not playing as well as you could or should do, you appreciate the confidence in trying to pull it off. But there are times when there's a time for discretion and there's a time for candor. And you could tell that the players... I guess that probably what they're feeling and what we're feeling aren't necessarily one and the same. And also, like you say, they want to put on a bit of a show. It's their first time in Europe. They want to make a statement. Yeah. And I don't think necessarily shut up shop, but I just think keep it basic. And once we keep it basic in the De Zerbi way, then we can, for the most part, get past anyone.
Yeah, Justin?
I think also that they kind of played a low block, but it was slightly different to a West Ham or an Everton, who pay a five and then a four, and then they have a marauding Antonio or someone who bullies our defenders and gets a goal every time it breaks. I think what they did was they had a back three, and then they kind of had a five in front of that was their low block. And I don't think we ever got to grips with that. And I think De Zerbi needs to do some learning about that. How do you combat that particular sort of block? Because I don't think we created nearly enough opportunities, and that was a disappointing thing. We did miss a couple, but we weren't creating the number of opportunities our possession warranted. And our possession was 75%.
Was it?
And Athens are a possession team. I looked at their previous European games this season. They've done fantastic. They've been up in the 60s, I think, against their Champions League qualifier. So, I think De Zerbi needs to go back to the drawing block on that, because I hadn't seen that before, and I don't recall seeing that sort of block, and I think it caught us out.
Okay, well, the third was one that Tarek Lamptey's probably not going to want to see again. And it's actually bizarrely, it's one of those ones where if Lewis Dunk was on the pitch, then maybe I think that the danger would have been cleared. But
A little bit
it was
harsh,
just
I think. There
frustrating.
was they just did well with it. You know, I think that when you say, I mean, Tarek Lamptey, he tried to jump with a bloke who's three times his size and got just bullied off the ball. And that's when he ended up flat on his backside. And that from there on, that's because all the while he was on his feet, we still had a decent chance of defending it. But after that, it was two against one. And yeah, I mean, soft goals. I mean, this thing just dribbled in again with a couple of ricochets. You know, those are the things that drive you around the twist, especially when you know they're avoidable. I suppose you could think every defensive team will say that every goal is avoidable. You know, whether it's a set piece or something from open play, but could so and so have done better? Should they have Larratt fit into row Z? It's just one of those things. That, as they say, is football. Listen, we didn't disgrace ourselves in that sense. No. It's just we're frustrated because we know that we can do better.
There was a case of underestimating them a little bit as well. I think.
I don't think so because you play every team on its merits.
You speak to 90% of the people in the stands, and most people thought we were going to win comfortably.
No, that's because the nature of the level of expectation, and you think, well, what did you know about AIC in the first place?
I knew a bit because I did some research.
Well, you might have done, but the number of people
on
think,
the
well,
show. But you know, I had to. But
I mean, how many people knew what AIC were going to offer us? You know, so I mean, it's just that thing of here we are, top of the Premier League, you know, high up in the Premier League. Therefore, we must be one of the better sides in Europe. It doesn't work that way. Yeah. We have to prove it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we carried on pushing for the equaliser, Justin, and nearly found a way through, particularly with Simon Adingra, who's someone I just absolutely love watching play. That he just cut in off the wing and curled one, which is very similar to Jose Escuero against West Ham, kind of, but apart from Escuero, scored. But yeah, there's a lot to come from him, isn't there?
Yeah, definitely. He's sort of a starter now, isn't he? He isn't afraid to start him, and we can rotate him now with sort of Matoma or March, because I think he's equally good on the right as he is on the left, which is a really good trait to have.
Yeah, he certainly seems to be fitting into De Zerbi's way of doing things. And it's nice to have. Do you remember once upon a time, think, oh, how many more wingers do we want to sign? Well, now we're going for quality over quantity.
Yeah. Okay, well, the European adventure, of course, continues away in Marseille next. But obviously, we've got more action this weekend, which we'll have a look at shortly. But first, you are listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. As usual, we're delighted to be brought to you in association with a brilliant oldfootballshirts.com. And Phil has given us a beauty this week, actually. And Justin, do you want to have a go at describing this one?
It is a kind of a two colour shirt. The top quarter, I'd say, above the arms is all black, and then the bottom section is red, but it's kind of a diagonal line that joins the two colours apart, and then over that diagonal line and kind of above and below it is what appears to be lots of kind of splattered white paint.
I'm glad you went with paint.
Yeah. It's a New Balance shirt. The sponsor is a company called Boulanger. That's put me in a certain kind of a geographical area. There's a hexagon badge that looks like the Thundercats badge.
he has photoshopped it, I've got to be honest. So it's
maybe it's half Thundercat. I don't know. I'm going to go for a French team. I'm going to go for Lille because we've just signed Balibar from them.
Wow. Do you want to put a year on it?
I'm going to go with, I think it's quite a recent one, actually. So I'm going to go with 2022 because I think it might be the...
Oh, almost. You almost got the full house. Almost got the full house. Is this is you're right, it is Lille, and this is what Phil has to say about this particular jersey. He says, this is your shirt of the week, and this is the 2019 to 2020 home shirt for French Ligue 1 side Lille Olympique Sporting Club. The club goes by the nickname Le Doug, also which translates to be the Mastis. And they play at the 50,186 capacity Stade Pierre-Mauroy. The stadium was opened in 2012 and has a fully closing roof. And it has also hosted the French national team and rugby teams, as well as a tennis's Davis Cup on three occasions. The site was founded as a result of a merger between Olympique Lillois and SC Fever in 1944, after both were weakened by World War II. In their first season, the War Machine, as they were referred to, won the Coupe de France, and the following season they won the League and Cup double. Subsequently, they've won the League three more times, most recently in 2021. They've also won the Coupe de France six times and the Intertoto Cup once. In 2004. The local rivals are RC Lens, Lille holding the upper hand in the Derby du Nord with 45 victories to Lens 37. Loads of former Lille players have gone on to play in the UK. Here's just a few. Divock Origi, Johan Kabaye, Mathieu Del Bouchy, Eden Hazard, Luca Digne, Gabriel, Sven Botman, who's at Newcastle at the moment, Idris Guy, who's Villa and Everton. Some other notable players, former players, include Patrick Cliver, who finished his playing career there in 2008. The calamitous Peter Odemwingie was at Lille from 2004 to 2007. And even Joe Cole pulled on the Lille shirt whilst he was on loan from Liverpool in 2011. And one we won't want to remember, I've got to say this properly, is Ezequiel Ponce. He was at Lille in 2017, and he was also at the Amex, first scoring the winner. Linked to the Albion, you ask? Well, indeed. How about Yves Bissouma? He started his career with Lille, making over 60 appearances before his move to the Albion in 2018. And bang up to date, Cameroonian midfielder Carlos Baleba also began his career with Lille, just 30-odd games before he became one of Lille's biggest ever transfers, joining the Albion at the beginning of this season. So thank you for that, Phil. Of course, you can see that and over 130,000 other shirts over at oldfootballshirts.com. Alan.
And don't forget, this is Radio Reverb, a community radio station to the stars. They are good enough to allow the Albion Raw a platform to offload our guff. So that's every Wednesday at 8 o'clock, every Thursday 5 o'clock in the afternoon, and every Saturday at midday. Now, Radio Reverb is a community radio station. It cannot accept advertising for its funding. It can only have donations, grants, and sponsorship. We are obviously very grateful to Old Football Shirts and have been for the past, older than a bottle of scotch, years for their sponsorship. Having said that, we cannot survive by Old Football Shirts alone. So if you would like to go to radioreverb.com and hit the donate button, it's about that time of the month where you get paid. For those not going to Marseille, Amsterdam and Athens and therefore have little more else to save for, then please do chuck us a fiver or a tenner or a couple
of
hundred. That would be great.
The price of a coffee.
Well, it depends. Are we talking about the a cup of coffee or the entire plantation?
Well, so, I mean, if it's a price of coffee in Paris, that'd be really good. Because
better still. Absolutely, yeah. Better still. And you'll get the Gallic shrug with it. So if you could go to radioreverb.com/donate and chuck us a few quid, that'd be absolutely marvellous. Thank you in advance.
Okay, so Sunday afternoon, Justin, we're back in league action with Bournemouth, our visitors. Last season they came here, we won 1-0 with a late goal from Karim Mitoma, and Bournemouth gave a really good account of themselves in that game, actually, which is unusual for them.
Our record against them recently is awful.
Yeah.
#5-0.
Yeah, I've erased that from my memory, like many things. But
5-0. I know, and I'm going to go away. Basically,
anyway, yeah. Back to league action then, and there was 9 changes to the side that lost to Athens, with only Billy Gilmore, and Purvis Estupiñán surviving. There was a start, Justin, for Facundo Bulanote, and I was actually disappointed with this, not because he was starting, but because of where he was starting. Because he came on Thursday, and when we signed him, he was the heir apparent to Alexis. He was the next cab off the rank for Alexis, and yet every time we see him, he's been shifted out to like one of the wings. So when he came on Thursday and he was actually playing in that number 10 role and dotting around, he looked really, really good. And I was hoping when I saw his name on the team sheet that he would be playing in that role.
Yeah, we have a lot of players who can play in that number 10 role. That is our problem. And I agree with you completely. I don't think Buonanotte is a right winger. I don't think he can play. I don't think he can lead the line on the right. I think sort of Bournemouth proved that. As an attacking midfielder, as a number 10, as even maybe a right midfielder with maybe a forward there in front of him, I think he's gonna thrive. But this right winger thing, he doesn't look like that type of player. Stick him in the centre, as you say.
I think what really did for him, actually, certainly in the first half, well, I was about to say the first half, he came off at half time. The thing that really did for him in the first 20 minutes was Bournemouth kept kicking at him. I mean, there were some brutal tackles going. I mean, they really were zeroing in on him. I mean, what do they think that, you know, what they're going to do, nick his satchel and his tuck shop money? He was just getting the bejesus knocked out of him. I think that maybe they thought that he was a bit of a loose cannon who might react, but he didn't really get enough. I don't disagree. Right wing is not his forte. And I think that if you're talking about central midfield players, there are going to be people ahead of him in the traffic. So if you do want to play him, if you do want to blood him, yes, you probably do want him more in the centre than out wide. And I think that, you know, going from what we're talking about here at the beginning of the game to something that De Zerbi said at the end of it, maybe he made too many changes. And one of them might have been that actually Buonanotte could have come on in place of someone else more in the central role. Having said that, it was going to always be difficult. It's who you've got to consider who played on Thursday. And we're back to, and this is where we're now entering that cycle, that bit of mad rotation where it's not even just Sunday, Thursday. I mean, this week we've got another game midweek. Thankfully, I mean, we then got Marseille the week after that. Bliss, no midweek game. Yeah. So it's all going to be a bit tricky, but this is what we now are into, that we can't necessarily put out what any given fan would consider the best 11.
Yeah, well, one person that was missing from the squad on Sunday was Pascal Gross, which is bearing in mind he has a habit of pretty much starting every single game. It looks like he's going to be out until, I think, the 21st of October, they were saying, is when he's due back. So that's going to be a big miss and a chance for somebody. But one person who was back was Lewis Dunk, and we were delighted to have him back, Justin.
Yeah. Really pleased when I saw the team sheet with Dunk, and actually I was equally pleased to see Evan Ferguson up front. By half time, I'd realised that I was right about one of them and completely wrong about the other. Whatever was wrong with Ferguson, he missed the Athens match. He was clearly still suffering with, so I imagine his illness. But yeah. He didn't look match ready or match fit, sadly.
I mean, their centre back was pretty good, but there's not that many can beast Ferguson, and that's when you got to think, well, either their number 27, their centre back, is really, really good, or Ferguson just isn't either fit or isn't well enough.
Yeah,
because like, he
wasn't reading the room as well. But is the other thing? I mean, well,
there's a bit of that, but when he did get the ball, he just seemed to be short of that extra that yard that he's got, that bit of nous that he's got, that little sort of shimmy that he's got, it just wasn't there.
I mean, obviously we've got to talk about the Bournemouth goal. Now, obviously, I'm not gonna criticise Brigham for it, because that's how we've been told to play. That's how our goalkeepers play. I think with Steele, perhaps he does, if that ball isn't on, then he will do something else. I don't think Verbruggen kind of did that very much.
I'm not going to criticise him for that either. I'm not going to criticise him for that. It's Bournemouth weren't falling into our trap. You could see them hanging off. You could see them hanging off. And even when their fella did close in down, they still had an enormous slice of luck because that ball could have gone anywhere. It could have gone to a Brighton defender. As it transpired, it went to a Bournemouth striker who, you know, did what he needed to do to stick it in the net. Good for him. But like I say, I mean, the number of... Well, let's put it this way. We have seen this criticism come up on certain radio stations that aren't this one.
Are you talking about a certain former Albion striker?
What is wrong with him? I mean, there's a reason why he's not a football manager. I mean, there's a reason why we're not football managers. But like I say, I mean, that's a routine that we do 10, 15, 20 times a game. And over 50 games that De Zerbi's been in charge, you know, the goalkeeper must have had 1,000 touches, probably more, way more than that in each game. And it hasn't gone wrong. Lewis Dunk will always tell us we know what we're doing. We could see what went wrong there. And it was just, again, just that half pace, that half step off. It's just one of those things. I'll take that one error in 1,000 anytime over changing the success that it has brought us.
Yeah, Justin? I mean, Justin, one goal conceded from that. And like, well, we're the leading scorers in the Premier League. So it's risk versus reward, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely, and I agree with Al completely on that. I it's almost controversially, it's almost quite a good thing. What I don't like watching is when we bait the press and they just don't come and get our players. They just sit back. So an Everton or a West Ham. So it's almost like reverse psychology. Bournemouth have shown the rest of the Premier League, you know, no, go out and get them. Go out and get them. You know, storm forward. That's what De Zerbi wants. So hopefully it's given some more teams some confidence to try and catch us out. And we will, you know, it's brilliant we haven't conceded more goals like that because we play by centimetre margins the back. And we are trying to bring all of the opposition team as far out of their area as possible. So in hindsight, you know, we won, so it's easy me to say all this stuff, but I'm not. That is a risk we face, and deserve. Yeah. Like Blue, you know, he's a gambler, and he just in his mind, and it's there's proof in that we're third in the Premier League. He's going to win more than he's going to lose. So,
well, this is it. I mean, that particular movement has been the start of so many goals. I mean, I'm looking even at Manchester United, which was the previous league game. So it's clearly a tactic. Yeah, it scares the bejesus out of us. Yeah. And even then, when you say, oh, Bournemouth have shown everyone how to do it, well, they did in the first half, but that's because we probably weren't doing as quite we should. Because in the second half, I don't seem to recall too many of those issues. You know,
Bournemouth were still in the game, but I'm not
still talking in the game, but it's yeah, and they still. I mean, I think they were a bit shell shocked after 10 seconds of the second half.
Yeah. Let's just rewind a little bit because if we gifted them the opening goal, then they certainly gifted us one back. It was from a corner. The ball was pinging around a little bit. We tried to get the ball over the line, and the ball fell to Billy Gilmour, who put in an absolutely gorgeous ball.
To who, AD? Who did it fall to?
Billy Gilmour.
Thank you. Say his name properly, please.
La 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 la. And he put in an absolute peach of the ball into the corridor of uncertainty, Justin. And the Bournemouth defence, but basically they had to do something with it. I don't think any of our players were actually attacking
it. Yeah, that's it was good because it was into the corridor of uncertainty. But I think it looked like the Bournemouth defender, as he jumped up, he beat two other Bournemouth defenders to the ball. And yeah, it didn't look like we were going for it. So that makes it even more embarrassing. And yeah, it was simply, we'll give you a goal, just give us one back.
Yeah. I mean, I also think justice was done because that defender, he was playing at left back. The number of times he clattered Buonanotte and then carried that on into the second half. So, and he was trying so hard to get a yellow card through the whole game. The fact he failed and instead gave us a goal, I'll have that trade-off.
Yeah. Okay, well, a half-time whistle went just after that, and the teams came out for the second half, and Roberto De Zerbi had made two changes at half-time, with Ansu Fati and Karu Mitoma entering the fray for Ferguson and Benotte. Justin, what happened 15 seconds later?
Well, you bring on two world-class players, and they score in about 20 seconds.
15.
15. that's what happened. So, Ansu Fati, he put pressure on the ball, and the ball was deflected and sort of looped up in the air. We got possession back. Mitoma ran with it. Went to Ansu Fati, a lovely little pass inside, and the most beautiful, exquisite little flick from Dude. I think people have missed out on.
I missed it.
Straight into, so he's the link man between Fati and Mitoma getting there. And as soon as Mitoma gets the ball in the penalty area, he seemed to kind of, he's just faster and quicker than anybody else in that box. And it's just, it's in the back of the net straight away.
Yeah.
I'd say this after watching it on TV, because I was one of those idiots who...
you were an idiot who what?
Hadn't returned to my seat in time.
Oh, so, I can think of a few other words, mate, believe me.
Yeah.
That is actually almost as bad as leaving the game early.
I know. It's something. I was in a urinal and
TMI. But yes, it was. I mean, thankfully, Bournemouth just, you know, they took the kickoff and then didn't look like they knew what they was going to do with it, which is their problem. You know, that's fine. But yeah, Fati, he's a player who's starting to fit in place. I didn't think he was particularly great against AEK. Looked a lot sharper, and I think was having a little bit more fun against Bournemouth. Had a decent second half. Mitoma, we know what he can do. Like I say, I missed the Dahoud flick, actually, which I just thought, you know, hang on, two players come on, 10 seconds later, the two of them combine for the goal. But yeah, nice little flick. I mean, how random was that he was in the area alongside those two as well? That was a little bit weird as well.
Billy Gilmore was involved in that movie as well, so it was...
Who?
Billy Gilmore!
Thank you.
There's another opportunity. Fati still hasn't opened his account for the Albion, but he perhaps should have done. It was an absolutely beautiful ball from Simon Adingra. He just put it on a plate for him. And I've got written down here, 50p foot. I mean, we've heard of a 50p head, but this was a 50p foot.
Oh, this was the clearance, wasn't it?
I'm still not quite sure how it went in that direction.
I think he got, as they would say, he got too much on it. Because let's put it this way, if he was in his own area, you'd be proud of that clearance. Done, son, well got. But yeah, I mean, it was perfectly set up for him. But like I say, it'll come. You know, there's a lot of play. There's some. Listen, I'm itching to get on to the 76th minute here, mate. So, but there are players who are breaking into the forum, breaking to the fore, and they will come good. So. Can we talk? Can we please get to him now?
Well, there was just before that, Al. There was another change and a debut for Carlos Baleba.
That's who I'm talking about.
I think that everyone might be getting a little bit excited.
The first thing you saw my first observation was he was bigger than I thought he would be. And I imagine you put him alongside the likes of Billy Gilmore, and the Who, and Grossi. He's going to tower above them. He's big. And then I realised he was very, very quick. And that was good. I'm not going to say, and then I saw his pace. And then it was... it was the tackling. And it was like, wow. We got Bissouma or Caicedo back. It was just crunching into those tackles. It was so glorious. And then he just picks the ball and just runs and carries it directly through up the middle of the pitch. very exciting. And obviously, he needs, you know, a bit of a rough diamond. He needs a lot of time with Deserby. But in terms of having a debut and in terms of potential, wow.
This is it.
I mean, we can't get too carried away with it.
No,
I mean,
we can't.
Ryan Harley was good for it the first 20 minutes he played for us as well.
Well, please don't ever compare Ryan Harley to Carlos Palou. Please. I mean, yes, it was only a 20-minute cameo. But the other thing that carrying on from what Justin's saying there, is also the kind of the style and the mannerism with which he went into his tackles. It was you as though you were watching a Caicedo clone. You know, there's this kind of low center of gravity. There's this way of getting the ball that knocks the player out of the way without necessarily, with making sure he gets the ball first. I mean, for the third goal, he wins the ball, carries the ball on. A little bit unsure as to what he's going to do with it. That'll come. Loses it, wins it back, plays the ball again. And what I loved about this, and I know that we'll talk about the actual goal itself, is that for his role in the goal, Lewis Dunk went flying over to him first rather than to Mitoma to say, well done, son. Because, like I say, yeah, it's a 20-minute cameo. How excited should we be? We don't know, but we've seen what he can do. And if that's his debut, then, oh, yeah. I mean, if De Zerbi gets excited about him, then, frankly, we should be too.
Yeah.
Go on, Justin.
Go on, Justin.
Something else I saw on that theme, Al, at the end of the game, three of De Zerbi's heavies went straight up to Baleba and sort of were hugging him and congratulating him and kissing him. The guy
dirty
looks like
perverts.
The guy looks like AD couldn't take his hands off it. It was like he got a very sort of special. You've done it. We're very pleased with you. So I think you could see it was a big fillip for the whole club, and everyone knew how important it had been, and he did it.
Yeah, okay. I mean.
Well, let's talk about the goal then, and I mean, it was again. I mean, we talked about peaches of balls for give me another description for a peach of a ball, Al.
Well, can I just say that for most of that half, Estupiñán had been playing like Bambi on ice. He couldn't trap a bag of cement, but the one time it does come good, he laid it on a sixpence, which is nothing like what Matoma's hairstyle really is like. So there's two parts of it. There was the absolute perfect cross. Thankfully, the Bournemouth defence hadn't picked Matoma's run up, but also the way that Matoma then guided it into the corner. I mean, we've seen those be missed or they're straight at the keeper. He put it exactly where he wasn't. It was absolutely a header of beauty. And I love there's two other things about that. One, Matoma is a good header of the ball. And two, you also notice how well he hangs in the air. And I say he's not the tallest fella. He's not sort of a 6'4" bruiser, but he is actually in the box. He's pretty lethal when he's in the air.
Yeah. You've got to question the Bournemouth defence. They just sit really. They were nowhere to be seen.
Yeah, they were a bit like statues. But I did enjoy the Matoma's. You could see as the ball goes to Estupiñán, he goes straight into the centre forward position because he knows what's coming.
Well, that we've run out of time, amazingly.
That was quick.
So I know it's been really quick today, actually. So thank you so much to Justin Brentel, to Alan Wares. I've been Ailey Packham, and this has been the Albion Roar on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. Sports, the show is brought to you in association with oldfootballshirts.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you all again next week.
I thought love was only true in fairy tale, meant for someone else but not for me. Love was out to get me, that's the way it seems. Disappointing, haunted all my dreams. Then I saw her face, now I'm a believer. Not a trace, I got my mind. I'm in love, and I'm a believer. I couldn't leave her if I tried. the use in trying? All you get is pain. When I needed sunshine, I got rain. Then I saw her face. Now I'm a believer. Not a trace of doubt in my mind. I'm in love. And I'm a believer. I couldn't leave her if I tried. I saw her face. Now I'm a believer. Not a trace of doubt in my mind. I'm in love. And I'm a believer. I couldn't leave her if I tried. I saw her face. Now I'm a believer. Not a trace.